Welcome to MGAR Radio 3.10, the least blasphemous Michigan podcast on the internet.
Is that true?
Probably not.
I highly doubt it for some reason.
We don't engage in blasphemy. Not intentionally.
No. Probably unintentionally at times, but, you know.
I mean, there's some touchy Scientologists out there. But is that blasphemy?
No, not in my opinion.
I mean,
but now they're going to be touchy again.
I don't know. They can't sue me for calling them touchy, because then that just proves their point.
That's
my point.
True. That is the self-fulfilling prophecy right there.
What a good and excellent start to our podcast.
Absolutely.
I'm very proud of this. Michigan, we're going to talk about stuff.
But first,
let's thank our sponsors, the Underground Printing, the Bow Store, where we are right now, the Residence in Ann Arbor downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So, Maryland, we'll take one look back at a game that was exactly like the other two games Michigan played against kind of the bottom of the Big Ten recently.
Mm-hmm. So that happened. They ran the ball.
Yeah. And, you know, on replay, I think I mentioned in the game column that there was like a really egregious missed hold on LaVert Hill, which there was.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason it was an egregious missed hold on LaVert Hill instead of Hill being kind of like sneaky holding like he does a lot is because he was the recipient of an outright block by a Maryland receiver.
Which kind of sums up the officiating in this game both ways, I would say. Just a real bad missed call each way. Because, like, they had, like, you know, there's the defensive pass interference calls that aren't called on Michigan's first drive. And then there's also Donovan Peoples-Jones gets away with one of the most obvious holds I've seen on the edge to help give a player the corner. You know, there were some things both ways that were like, man, the refs just aren't trying today.
Yeah, and there were a couple of holds on the offensive line that Michigan definitely got away with.
Sure enough.
So that's something that kind of just jumped out at me, or is just like just rolling my eyes in general.
Yeah. It's been a year for eye rolling at the officials.
Yes, but, in many games, not just Michigan.
Make them full time already.
But kind of a couple of the takeaways from the offense. Cesar Ruiz, again, didn't come out with a minus.
Yeah.
Which is it's pretty
for
good.
A true freshman, not bad.
He didn't get a pass protection minus either, unlike Ben Bredesen, who picked up 4 in something like 20 passing snaps.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
So the target keeps moving. Juwan Bushel-Beatty, again, didn't really get got in the passing game. His impact in the run game didn't really leap out to me, but honestly, I'll take that trade all day. And then a couple of things that I only noticed on film is that, you know, I thought Brandon Peters had a fairly typical Brandon Peters day. But what was a little bit disappointing is twice on third and short, he had open guys, like in the, like, I want to convert this first down range. And he didn't find those guys. So,
yeah, and that's a situation where either he's not reading that play right given the situation, or he's just getting a little bit greedy.
Right. Like, there's like a third and two where they run a play action, they're running the fullback in the flat, and Ben Mason literally runs over the guy covering him.
Just a very Ben Mason thing to do.
Right, yes. I'm looking forward to that. But I figure if it's third and two, that's your first read, and that's, like, if the guy, like, blows over another guy,
that guy's probably not going to tackle him.
He's open, right?
Yeah.
So that was a little bit disappointing. That was the Tyrone Wheatley corner route that was a miscommunication between receiver and quarterback. And the second one was a little bit more understandable because they were running a couple of like little drag routes across the middle. McDooms was covered and then Evans was open. So if he was only reading the right side of the field, but I still kind of feel like if it's third and three, those should be your number one and number two reads. And if one of them's open, like that's kind of bad you didn't find it.
Yeah. I mean, I can't understand, you know, sometimes you know, people expect plays to get called in certain situations and to be read a certain way based on that situation. But especially when you're a freshman, you know, like a play call, you have a route concept and you read it a certain way. Just because that play gets dialed up on third down doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be used to kind of reading it back to front.
Right.
So that might be part of the problem, and that's sort of just a freshman thing that you're probably going to have to get – probably going to have to live with for a couple games here is Peters not having total mastery of the offense where he can kind of where he can make all of those plays.
That's a good point. He's probably just making some decisions and not realizing the situation he's in and thinking that this is going to be open and it's not yet. So that's progress.
Yeah, you're kind of running it as like, you know, right out of the textbook when you're a redshirt freshman.
But the those errors were his only bad reads of the game. So he's not really thrown in the coverage.
And he hasn't piled up many of those at all so far.
No, it's like one or two a game, and usually they're kind of innocuous like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, we didn't convert a first down, and that's a little bit annoying.
It's not you threw it at a guy who's about to run it back for a touchdown.
Right, and the one time he did kind of throw into coverage, it felt like he had no other options, and he knew he was throwing into coverage, so he throws it behind McCune.
Mm-hmm.
And McCune can't make a tough catch, but that's the place the ball had to be if they were going to get any yards on that play.
Yeah, it puts in a place where the defensive back just couldn't get around to it.
So, I mean, the run game was a little bit muted from complete pavings of Rutgers in Minnesota. And that's in part because Maryland is a better rush defense than those two teams, and it's in part because you know, Michigan had a little bit of misfortune. They didn't break anything long. And often that's more about whether the defense is blowing a run fit than anything that you did.
Yeah.
So
they didn't have Minnesota's linebackers in this game.
Right, yeah. But their line yards per carry were a 3.5 between the two starters. And then Kareem Walker had a couple of iffy decisions to bounce. One of them looked like it was going to be good.
And then he fell over in the back.
And then he fell over. And then
that'll hurt your line yards.
Yeah, and then two more were were pretty bad.
Yeah.
Where the same kind of cuts that you're seeing Higdon and Evans make, where they're just kind of waiting that extra half beat for a lane to open up in the middle. Walker decided to bounce it outside, and he got, like, chopped down fairly spectacularly.
Yeah, he seems to want to hit something big on most of his runs right now, and that works every once in a while. But
yeah, but a guy who's
got a little bit more variance, and he can run people over, so you'd like to see him get a little bit more north-south.
Yeah, his one successful run was actually really impressive because it's power, and he finds a cutback lane, and then, you know, a corner tries to tackle him, and that's not going to happen.
No.
But, he just needs a little bit more faith in the offensive line, which you can now have some faith in. The blocking number in this game was 71%, which is well above our two-thirds Mendoza line.
Mm-hmm.
And a large part of the minuses there were to Zach Gentry.
Yes.
So that was a regression for him. He had one really nice play on a corner blitz that he managed to block a guy who was slanting across his face past where he wanted to go. Other than that, had some struggles. Which I'll take, because I'd rather have, you know, Michigan's blocking be pretty good except for the tight end than pretty good except for three of the
offensive line. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's a trade-off I'll take. Only one of those guys can run up the seam for a 35-yard touchdown.
Yeah, and it's still a productive day on the ground. I think 25 carries for 130 yards for the two main backs. And that's in a game where, you know, Michigan rushes out to a 28-0 lead and
just puts away the wrinkles.
Right, exactly. They just wanted to bring it home, and they didn't do anything interesting at all in the second half, which they shouldn't have.
No, but you got two of your toughest opponents coming up. Why put anything on film?
So I think the run game, you know, wasn't as dominant as it was the past 2 weeks, but I don't think that there's a reason to really downgrade our expectations. Because
no, only if Higdon is out, I think, is that really the case.
Right. Like we knew that this wasn't like the top rushing offense in the country.
Yeah.
Like it looked like the past 2 weeks. We knew that was not the fact of the Michigan.
Yeah, we did not all of a sudden fully become Stanford.
Right. So minor step back, still a productive day in such a situation where, you know, you're not going to get huge chunk runs a lot because you have, what, three short fields immediately in the competitive section of the game. And then
there was a lot of hidden yardage in that game that did not show up in the box score.
And then on defense, I think the headliner is actually Josh Metellus,
mm-hmm.
who was my, like, number one star from the game.
That was a nice pickup.
The UFR like confirmed that too. I mean, he had a great pass block.
Yeah.
Pass breakup. He had a number of plays where he kind of flew in and made hard edge tackles on guys who were very slippery. He blocked a punt, which doesn't even factor into his plus seven.
Yeah, had that hard tackle at the goal line to prevent a touchdown.
Yeah,
a play that looked
so
like it was going to score.
That was so good. That was probably my favorite play of the day from a Michigan defender. So they're motioning a receiver across the formation, and Metellus is like, all right, I'm going to pick this guy up.
Yeah.
Knows exactly what's coming, gets around two guys trying to pick him, and still has like the ability to like hammer the guy down at the 2-yard line.
Because that little like motion into the flat on the goal line is just something you see, and you're like, oh, man, that's going to score.
Right, especially because Michigan is in man coverage.
Yeah, like as soon as that catches man, you see someone motioning with him. It's like, oh, he's dead.
Right, but they passed it off to him, and he executed excellently. That was a great play. He also had the brilliant decision to not quite tackle a guy in the flat.
yes. They gained like 10 extra yards off of that. And Lorenzo Harrison kind of bugged out there.
And that was actually an interesting aspect of mostly the first half, is that Michigan, I couldn't actually see the safeties.
No.
Ever.
No.
Because we got the...
Couldn't even see the outside receivers on most of the plays in this game.
Unbelievable. It was like 3rd and 10, and it's still poor revision. I'm just like, oh, come on. So, but Michigan's linebackers were aligning in a way that heavily implied that they were running 2-deep zone coverage.
Yes.
And you saw that in a lot of the outside runs in the first half, is that, okay, he'd get past like a linebacker and a cornerback.
And a safety screaming down on the edge already.
Right, and they'd pick up 5 yards or they'd pick up 3 yards. But not the same kind of like, oh God, it's Mike McCray trying to chase down a scat back kind of thing. and then they went back to a lot of man coverage in the second half, and that's when the little almost OPI screens that they were getting were working. So... And if that's not actually offensive pass interference, we should totally steal that.
Absolutely.
I got so angry.
Throw that to Donovan Peoples-Jones and let his receivers start blocking for him early, and let's see how that goes.
I was doing this, and I was like so angry. It's like, that's obvious offensive pass interference. And I was like, oh, that guy is like literally crossing the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, the one where
it's like so close.
The wrinkle that they have where they hit a receiver come out and then pop back behind the line.
That was awesome.
It's like, oh, that's tricky.
Yeah. That was like
that's evil.
That was like 30 yards, yeah. And we saw that the first time. It was Colorado last year,
mm-hmm.
where they kind of had this drag screen.
Yes.
And Maryland did some work in this game with that.
Yeah, Walt Bell's a good offensive coordinator, man. Like,
yeah.
He devises a lot of stuff that makes like the talent of his team irrelevant, and that is impressive.
And like, given what Michigan's been able to do this year, like, it's probably too late to add any of that frippery in there, but it seems like pretty simple, right? Just like receiver runs an in at 0 yards, other receiver blocks a guy in man coverage.
Sure,
could work. But the other thing that happened to Michigan's defense that was a little bit more concerning was there were a couple of outside zone runs that hit. One of them, Winovich couldn't hold the edge.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, Winovich got kicked out too far. And then I think it was Solomon got kind of sealed inside. And what Michigan's doing when they see that like H-back tight end thing that a lot of spread teams do, if he goes to the backside, the linebacker over him will follow.
Which takes him out of the play if that play is going the
right.
other way.
So if that tight end stays there, then he has to block Devin Bush. If he goes to the backside of the line, Devin Bush goes with him, and you've probably lost your best run defender to that motion. So hopefully Michigan will figure out some way to prevent that from happening, because a lot of...
Otherwise we're going to see outside zone with that split zone motion pretty much...
Yeah, Ohio State will do that.
Just going to eat it.
And Ohio State will be able to hit that play again. So Michigan's got to make a tweak there. Hats off to Maryland for showing it to Michigan in a game that they still won.
Yeah.
By a lot.
Good looking out.
Thanks, thanks, DJ. that's a gold star for you.
Yeah. Which is immediately taken away for the sad field goals, but whatever.
Hey, man, I don't have a problem with those. And then, you know, the other guy who really kind of stood out, who we haven't really talked about a ton this year, is David Long.
Yes.
So he has the interception where he's in man coverage, and he manages to read that the ball's going to go over his head and fall back, And he doesn't fall back enough to be relevant on a well-thrown ball, but it's not a well-thrown ball.
Yeah, and he's probably able to read that given the chaos that's happening in the backfield as he drops off his guy, too.
So that's an interception that I think a lot of guys don't make because they just stick to their wide receiver, so that's good.
Yeah.
And then he had a great pass breakup on a DJ Moore fly where she had completely dominated.
Which is impressive since he'd like just exited and like put on a knee brace too, and then he comes back out and dominates a route against one of the best receivers in the conference.
You know, I didn't catch that because so when you do the GIFs, you watch the whole game.
Yes.
Because you're like looking for anything that might be of interest.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I watch the game like Tim Brando, slowly in 3 second clips. So I like catch Tim Brando
dabbing.
Oh my God.
Or whatever that was.
It wasn't a dab. Don't know what
he
it was.
He looks so pleased with himself after, though. He was just like, I'm cool. Which, like, to be fair, I have done that. I've been like, yeah, I look like a confident individual. When I did not.
Really racking up the cool points the last couple weeks of this podcast.
nobody has any.
No.
Like... I'm amply prepared for when the kid is old enough to be like, you are the lamest person on earth. And I'm like, learned that a long time ago, buddy. Yeah,
guilty as charged.
You got to try something else in your quest to defeat me. What was I talking about?
I don't know. David Long?
David Long, oh, yeah.
And the gifts, and then, yeah, and then we went to
so
the Tim Brando thing.
Yeah, I missed the
knee brace deal. Yeah.
I go immediately to the next play and watch it like 8 times. But he also had a couple of nice plays in run defense. He was the guy who shot up and made the Metellus play where he cannily missed a tackle.
Yes.
Instead of the Curtis Samuel run from last year. I should not have brought that up. I apologize to everybody out there. That was...
Once a podcast, man.
Yeah, it's not...
Oof.
It's not good. It's bad.
Oof.
And then Josh Uche... had 2 impact plays on 6 snaps.
Insta obliterated a screen to the point where Michigan was kind of upset because Mike McRae was totally going to pick that and run it back.
Yeah. and now 24/7 is publishing snap counts from Pro Football Focus, so that's nice.
Yes.
So now we know it's exactly 6 snaps, and on a third of them, he did something pretty cool. And the second one was on the long interception play where he takes a Maryland tight end and puts him back in the quarterback.
Yeah.
Which is...
not something we totally expected to see from Josh Uche this early.
Well,
I mean, it's a tight end, so that's different than it being an offensive lineman. But, you know, he was supposed to be kind of this, like, tweener linebacker speed rusher type. And to see him pull up just a straight power move like that was kind of nice to see, especially since he hasn't had – if you play 6 snaps, you don't get to set that up with a speed rush. You just have to do that.
But you are very fresh, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he was ready to go, but – it's not like he had spent all that game going with a swim move or something so that he'd catch the guy off guard by just going with a bull run.
Yeah, I don't know how big that tight end was. If he's like 250 or something, Uche's probably only 10 or 15 pounds lighter than him. So if you're that explosive and you get into him.
Sure.
I mean.
Even so, that was a dominant play for somebody who's not seeing a lot of the field yet.
And Uche was that explosive on that screen where.
Yeah, my goodness.
That was
what was amazing was seeing a couple of people on Twitter assume that was Maurice Hurst, which says amazing things about Mo Hurst, because nobody who weighs like 300 pounds can move that way.
Right, because that's because he almost got that against Rutgers.
And yeah, I mean, he has nearly obliterated plays before they happened before, but this Uche was on a completely different light speed off the snap level there.
So
that was nuts.
It'll be interesting to see how Michigan deploys him
next year, yeah.
Because, like, he's the linebacker who's getting the most playing time who's not one of the starters.
Yeah.
But it's not very much playing time. And is he able to be an inside linebacker?
That is the question. Because as a blitz piece, we know that, man, he's looking pretty darn good.
But is he just kind of a pass rush specialist? Or is he a guy who can be an every down linebacker? I don't know. We'll see.
We'll find out. He had a very interesting athletic profile coming out of high school.
Yeah. He did. He was a very Don Brown linebacker, so he's got that going for him.
Yes, absolutely.
And not in, like, the Caddyshack way, in a legitimate...
really does have that going
Really
for
does
him.
Have that going for him.
Which is nice.
Thank you. Well done. Did we talk about Cesar Ruiz? We already did, yeah?
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what are we thinking in terms of his deployment with Mike Onwenu coming back, hopefully?
I mean, Onwenu's done it against better teams, and he's...
Oh, I'm not saying Ruiz will start over him, but people are thinking that maybe Ruiz can displace Patrick Kugler at center, which seems like a real bad idea heading into this portion of the schedule.
Yeah, I don't think they have room for him.
Yeah. Does he knock Steven Spinelis out of that extra line spot? Because, no. Man, Spinelis has been really good at that.
That's what we should talk about.
Yeah.
So this is the second straight week that I have clipped Spinelis absolutely caving a dude and pancaking him on – well, he had two in this game. He had two very, very impressive pancakes, and neither time did the running back take advantage of them.
No.
So, like, trust Steven Spinelis. I know he uses big words, but that doesn't mean that he can't block. I know that those things are not often correlated. But in Steven Spinelis' case, they are. So trust Steven Spinelis, despite the fact that he talks like us. Except he can pronounce things, I imagine.
Yes. Really, we're selling him short right now.
Yes. Yes, we are. All right, we're going to take a break, and we have a special guest. Dr. Sapp's going to come and talk to us because it is the 11th anniversary of Bo Schembechler's death. So a somber but hopefully slightly merry segment.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bo Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bo.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to MGo Radio. That's like a 2 on the rave scale.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like more like a... Like I'm at a party in LA that's kind of laid back. How you doing?
Good, man. Good to be back. How are you?
This is Dr. Sapp, everybody. Steve Sapp, Ardanis. One of the great treasures of Michigan fandom. You and Dooley and Craig Ross. Really,
Crick.
Yeah. Crick. Like, I think a lot of fan bases kind of think about their history, but you guys bring it to people and live it, and that's a really great thing.
Cool. Thanks.
So thank you, man.
Appreciate it.
And it is the 11th anniversary of Bo's death, of course, right before Football Armageddon in 2006. So we thought we'd just kind of have you on, talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Bo Schembechler. And we were talking in the break about, you know, Bo's relationship with Woody and how he kind of brought that same relationship to his players when he was coaching them. And that relationship was outright hatred.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear him say that. You know, the book that he wrote with Mitch Albom, I've got the book on cassette, which I, of course, then transferred to CD and then now to an MP3 so I can listen to it on my iPod wherever I go. Sounding old. But
master of formats. You don't sound like old. You sound crafty, which I guess is another way to say old.
Yeah.
But
so I was, because Bo always talked about Woody in such reverence, but in here he actually uses the word hate, where he says, you know, I hated Woody. And that surprised me because everything that he said, he just talked about Woody in such glowing terms, right? Great coach, you know, great motivator. But he said, I literally hated him. And today I was speaking with John Arbesnick on the way in, and he told me the same thing, that he hated Bo as a coach. He just hated the way that he pushed them. But then he realized that, you know what, he made me the player that I was, the team captain that I was. And those are the lessons that he then imparts on the players. But yeah, in the heat of the moment, there was hate.
And I think that's something that he passed on to one Jim Harbaugh. I mean, people talk about, like, people are like, oh, people are upset because he's really pushing them hard and I don't want to go that hard. And I'm like, well, it's been passed down from father to son for generations now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the type of player that Bo wanted. He didn't want anybody in any gray area. You know,
right.
he wanted you fully engaged, fully, you know, buying in, much like Jim is, right? And that's how Jim plays, and that's how Jim coaches, and those are the players that he wants. I need your full attention all day, every day. And if you're not prepared to do that, don't bother showing up.
And he wants people who are, like, angry. Like, if you're mad at him, that's fine. Like, there was a quote earlier this year from, I think, Don Brown, who is like, I got in a fist fight with Carlo Kemp.
Yep.
And that was like a positive. He's like, this guy's really yeah, plugged
he's,
in.
He's getting after it. Getting a little salty.
And that's got all of its roots from Bo. I mean, Bo would just engage the team like that. Everyone thinks that he was this taskmaster, but he was really engaged with the players, and they responded to that. But I think that's part of what made him such a great coach, because he wasn't just an X's and O's guy. He wasn't the most creative guy. He didn't, you know, like we talked about before, he didn't introduce any new schemes like Rich Rod, right? He just literally coached to the hilt and got his players to play to the hilt. And that's, you know, Jim is one of those guys.
Yeah, and earlier this year we did a segment on Ufer. And the Bo relevant part about this is I'm listening to this Ufer CD. And the 73 field goal that gets
74,
called
yeah.
74 field goal that gets called no good when he looks good.
Oh no, no.
Yeah, and Ufer's doing the oh no, 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 and then it cuts to Bo doing a dead on impersonation
pitch
of this.
Perfect.
Yeah,
it blew my mind.
Goodness.
And it was just like, okay, Bo is my people, because if I knew Bob Ufer, God, I would do the same thing. He's just like, you know, he's like tweaking. He's a tweaker.
Yeah.
And that's something that...
That doesn't sound like you at all.
The last ham bender.
So, yeah, Crick and I, ironically enough, we got to meet Bo, of all places. 1982, I think it was, we brought our homemade half-striper football, because back in 1982, they didn't sell the NCAA footballs commercially.
Okay.
So we just
different era.
Right. So we just bought an NFL Wilson, and Crick said we're just going to tape and stripe off our own stripe, half stripe. So we did that. We brought it with us. which ironically ends up getting used at the photo days with Bruce Mate, because when he was the SID, he never thought to bring a zone football, so we brought ours. So you'll see in some of the old pictures, that's our football being thrown around by Jim Harbaugh and all, but we can talk about that later. So anyways, Crick and I decided, you know, we're going to throw the football around in Michigan Stadium.
Right, because you used to be able to do that.
Because, you know, we didn't want to do that at our home in South Windsor, Ontario, so we just crossed the border, came over here, walked into the stadium, threw the football around, and when we're done, we said, you know what, we're going to go into the coach's office, we're just going to kind of see what's going on. So we did. We walked into 1000 South State Street.
This is the point where you get shot now today.
Right, right. And so we're walking down the hallway, like, wow, there's Hanlon's office. You know, there's Terrell Burton's
office.
Man, I'm
glad we didn't do a gimmicky top five with him.
yeah.
You know, and there's all these, you know, iconic photos, right? You know, there's Wolfolk, and there's Wangler, you know, and there's Edwards. And so, of course, we got to, you know, hit the restroom, right? So
of course.
We go into the restroom, and who walks in? Bo, of all people. He gets...
This is
he's
why...
He's just like us.
This is why Harbaugh got his own restroom installed at Stanford. This incident has lived down through the ages. He's heard about it so many times.
Bo's version of this story is very different.
I saw these two guys from Canada, and I kicked their ass. So he walks in there, you know, and we're kind of just whizzing away, and Bo kind
of... As one does.
Bo straddles, you know, saddles up and does the same thing, and he's like, gentlemen, and we're like, coach? What are you going to say at that point?
Just try to look official. Like,
like I belong here,
official.
Right?
Yeah, like.
I'm 165 pounds at the time, like, coach? And so then we pretty much left after that.
Yeah, that's... So your I met Bo story is like I peed next to Bo.
So then a couple years later, and I
wait. Please tell me that there's not another, like, I met Bo in a bathroom story you recognize me. Okay.
So we were there at the 1985 photo day. And of course, we bring the football, and I'm kicking field goals, and Harbaugh is watching me, ironically enough. And Crick notices this because Crick's holding the ball for me. And Crick's like, kick a 30-yarder, kick a 40-yarder, because I was a kicker in high school. You know, kick a 50-yarder. So I kicked a 55-yarder. And Harbaugh stops his interview and says, hey, I saw that. That's a Michigan record. And we're like, dude, who else is going to know that here? Of all the players and people in the stadium, Harbaugh, who was the quarterback at the time, knew the Michigan record book, knew that it was a Michigan record, right? So
yeah.
We get our picture taken with Bo. And there I am. I sent it to Seth the other day. I don't even have my teeth in. I lost a couple teeth playing hockey. So I got my – I'm taking my picture with Bo, right? One of the iconic moments in my life, and I don't even have my teeth in.
Well, that was good because then he didn't recognize you as the guy from the – No. He's like, that guy had all
the teeth. Oh, we meet again.
Yeah. I don't think he remembered us because he asked us where we were from when we told him we were from Windsor. And he goes, oh, yeah, I've had a couple wild nights in Windsor. You have.
Well, he's got that in common with every 19-year-old in the state of Michigan.
Maybe. Yep. Maybe. So yeah, there's a few Bo stories for you.
Good God.
So it's not a very cursory interaction that I have here. It's pretty
Oh yeah, you are part of the family.
So I was telling Seth, I remember the week of his passing, you know, they had the countdown clock happening. But, you know, Tom Slate passes away in the beginning of the week, and that was this quarterback from the 71 team. And, you know, Bo was there by his bedside, you know, goes to his funeral, and he wasn't looking good. Bo was not looking good that week. He looked pale. He looked weak. But he makes that passionate plea one more time about the injustice that was served on that 1973 team. And he just never forgot that. And he just, you know, literally to his dying day, you know, he made sure that everyone knew that he was still pissed about what happened on that vote.
Well, it's hard to disagree.
Well, yeah, and one of the best teams really in college football history. So that's how much of an injustice it was.
I always say 73 on the field goal and immediately get corrected by one of these guys at 74 because they know. They remember.
Well, because like I said to Crick, because it matters.
Yeah.
It mattered. It still matters. And I think I even heard Jim say that, you know, recently. It matters. You do it because it matters. And you have to have that passion if you're going to succeed because it matters.
And that's kind of the lesson, I think, from Bo and some intervening coaches.
One last thing. Could you imagine today, just to put it in today's terms, right? Because I don't want to say the millennials, but the younger generation.
The millennials? Today, right? Hey, I'm not a millennial.
But
I have a job, you can tell.
To put it in today's context.
You have a job, too.
Bo coming to Michigan today would literally be, I'm trying to find the parallel here. I don't know, maybe D'Antonio going to Auburn, setting up shop next to, you know, Saban in Alabama and saying, you know what, I'm going to build my own team right here in your backyard, and I'm going to take you down. And I, you know, maybe DJ Durkin coming to Michigan State and doing that, right? You have that sort of closeness and literally in your own backyard saying, I'm taking you on one-on-one.
Right.
That, I don't know, that's crazy when you think about it. But that's what happened in 69.
It is. It's like if Michigan hired, like, Tom Herman.
Yeah.
Essentially.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That was my other parallel. If Michigan hires Herman and he goes head-to-head with, you know. Urban versus Herman.
Well, I didn't mean to, like, slam millennials. I was more like talking about the economy.
I was kidding.
You know, like, you know, it's hard to get a job because all the jobs are.
Okay, no, so in that way, it was actually a compliment. Cool.
Not really.
Take it that way.
More of a... Anyway. Thank you for being on, Seb. It's always a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Much Appreciate better it. Than Ben Mathis Lilly. What?
I wasn't even here for that.
You weren't? Okay. It was difficult to remember because, you know, you guys are pretty much from the same genre of dude.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like... appearance.
Okay.
Obviously, you're a much
better
podcast.
Well, he called you a dude, at least. He called you a dude.
All right. I'll take dude.
Don Brown would approve.
I don't mean to slam Ben Mathis Lilly's writing. He's a very good writer.
Just his podcasting.
Well, this is deeply unfair.
Sorry, Ben.
Like, he's
he's probably listening to this.
Yeah, he's my bro. And I just thought his appearance was hilarious. And yours was as well.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Spath. Appreciate not Spath.
Whoa!
Spath. Wait, let's not. I'm really. I'm burned out.
It's been
out,
a
man.
Long day.
It's been
You've
a
been
long
up late.
Season. I apologize for that. That wasn't as bad as calling him Dave, though.
No. Nothing's ever going to touch Dave.
Dave.
There are many Daves. It could have been any of them.
But you called John you Bacon Dave.
Yeah. Anyway, now that we've burned bridges with several people. Let's take a break, come back, talk about some basketball.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one, finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Yeah!
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
All right, yeah, same party in L.A. We're watching some BoJack Horseman, so this has got some dark overtones. Oh, it's time for our hummus segment. Today they have the beet hummus, and you know how I feel about beets, Ace.
Quite positively, I believe.
I wish they would all be thrown into the ocean.
So it's the opposite of that.
This is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I've had some. It's made with white beans and topped with diced beets, and it makes beets palatable. So if you actually like beets, I can't imagine how good it tastes.
Pretty darn good. I don't mind beets.
You don't what?
I said I don't mind beets.
They're like slimy and a little sugary and they make your mouth pink. That's all good to you?
It works out. I got some nutritional value.
Everything has nutritional value. Even empty calories are calories.
Okay, that's an argument.
Would you like to say something about the hummus now?
I said it tasted good.
Okay. Could you sound more enthused about it, please?
It tastes good.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Good job, Ace.
There we go. Very professional podcast.
Hey, man, that was good.
Do you want to tell them where they can get the Lantana hummus?
Yes, thank you. I do. Check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer. And if you tweet at me about the hummus, the rule is like I'm not going to retweet it unless there's a cat involved.
Yeah.
And even then, like I don't want to do it too much.
Please don't actually like make a cat hummus. Like don't do that.
Well, then I wouldn't even be able to tell unless there's like bones sticking out. Don't do that. Don't do any of that. Anyway, let's talk about basketball.
Let's do that.
I forgot to tape the game last night, so I missed it.
Well, it would have been difficult to tape because it was on BTN Plus.
Oh.
So,
well,
you and like 95% of the Michigan fan base
BTN Plus,
missed this
huh?
game.
For like a Thursday night game?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there was like a Rutgers basketball game that they had to show or something. I don't know.
I think they advertised it. It was like Rutgers versus like High Point or something. Who's going to watch that?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to jokingly say dozens, and that might be too many.
Yeah, man. I legitimately wonder if we have more like podcast subscribers than that game had viewers.
You know, I wouldn't be shocked.
All right, let's talk about the basketball game that did involve Michigan, however.
Yes.
Someone tweeted me and is like, I bet Brian's pants are 6.5 feet away from his body because John Teske was going off. And, sir, if they were, and I'm not saying they were at least 7 inches. That is not at all. That is not at all the direction I wanted to take that. 7 feet and 1 inch away from my body. Well,
All right then, Brian.
I've clearly lost all rights to speak for the rest of my life. So, Ace, if you could tell us about the basketballing.
Yeah, well, I will let you know. So, we'll start with Teske because he was kind of the story of this game, no matter your reaction. He ends up with a double-double in just 15 minutes. He scores 10 points, makes all five of his shots from the field, pulls down 11 rebounds. Five of them are on offense. There's a play late in the first half where he and Xavier Simpson just totally shut down a pick and roll. It leads to a Michigan fast break pass on the other end. Teske looks like he knows what he's doing. And he's enormous.
He is enormous.
He appears to have pretty decent touch around the basket. His rebounding instincts were good in this game, and that followed up Michigan's previous game where he only had one rebound show up in the box score, but he had another tap out that was really a huge impactful play.
Yes.
In this game, he was doing that also on the offensive glass. I mean, like I mentioned, five offensive rebounds. He was basically batting everything back out to let Michigan reset. I don't think we're going to miss Mark Donnell. this is going to work out pretty well, I think. And he doesn't get a block to show up in the box score, but he affects shots at the rim.
How big is Southern Miss? Are they tiny or are they just
They're not huge. Okay. So it's worth noting that the size of the competition here, I mean, until Michigan gets to Maui, which it happens Monday, so we'll start getting some real returns then, but these first few games, tough to take real takeaways from for the most part. But Teske, I mean, you can take something away from this because you could have put him up against a 5'11 guy last year and he wouldn't have been in the right place to score these baskets.
Right, and there wasn't – I mean, we saw Mark Donnell play 11 minutes against a lot of teams last year.
We sure
some
did.
Of them very bad.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was really comforting for people worried about that backup center position. I mean, it looks like it's certainly not going to be worse than last year, and I think there's a lot of room for improvement there because he's a real impactful player.
In the press conference afterwards, Beilein was talking I think someone directly asked him about this. Like, could Wagner play the five on the four with Teske out there at the five at the same time? And I was like, is that worse defensively than Duncan Robinson?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something I think they're going to – want to explore. The question is how much they've set themselves up to be able to do it, because even last year Wagner, when they'd have DJ Wilson play the five on defense, Wagner was still playing the five on offense, and there is a big difference in Beilein's system between the five and the wing positions.
That is right,
because you're running completely different actions. I mean, the center in Beilein's offense is mostly a screener.
Mm-hmm.
Or is in the post or is popping out. And there's a whole lot of things that Wagner has not done yet that he'd have to get down, because you're not going to have Teske at the four, obviously.
No.
Although seeing him try to curl off a screen would be something to watch, but might not be super effective. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they maybe try something out there and maybe see if they can have like a change-up zone defense that goes along with throwing out a massive back line, but that's probably going to take some time to develop, I would guess, given Wagner has not played the four yet. But it does add some intrigue, because it'd be very interesting to see what those two can do out on the court together.
And after the game, Beilein was just, I would say, livid at his offense. He said they were terrible and the ball was getting stuck everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think Beilein's being a little harsh because he's a coach, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And this was a weird game because, you know, Michigan kind of has a rough start offensively to the season, at least by their standards, because they run into a couple sort of junk zones. And this early in the season, you're still just working on installing your offense. So it's not like they've practiced zone offense a ton. Early in this game, you know, Southern Miss, they expect them to be a man-to-man team. So, of course, early in this game, after a few possessions, they bust out a 2-3. And it was like, you jerks. and they kind of flip back and forth as the game goes on. So it did seem like Michigan had some trouble getting into rhythm. But I thought in this game, they once again were generating a lot of good shots. They ended up going 8-for-23 from beyond the arc. And I thought given the quality of the looks they had, that number could have been higher in terms of the makes.
Yeah, there were definitely some Twitter people who were like, very, very upset at the luck of the various three-pointers that were going in or not going
in.
Oh,
yeah, because, I mean, like, Southern Miss hits a couple, like, pretty absurd step-backs right before halftime, one to give them a one-point halftime lead. And this has definitely been something that's building up. You go and look at the season-long stats. Michigan's only making 32.9% of their threes, which is pretty darn low for them, especially considering the competition and the quality of look so far have been good. And then you go at the other side, and I think Michigan's perimeter defense has been pretty solid. And they've been holding opponents to a relatively low volume of three-point attempts. They're making 48% of them.
48%?
48% of them. We're talking about North Florida, Central Michigan, and Southern Miss.
And a lot of those are just terrible jams.
Yeah, and a couple of these are step back. You know, the one at the end of the half, this dude's legs were, like, flailing out, you know. So we... Concerns about the defense are, I would say, largely overblown at this point because otherwise they've been pretty great.
They've looked much better and much more locked in than they have.
Yeah, their rotations have been crisp. They're holding opponents below 40% on two-pointers. And if you're talking about a stat that drives defense, that's the one.
Yeah. So teams are shooting significantly better from three than from two.
Yes, nearly 10 full points. So that's a thing that's currently happening.
Yeah.
Also happening, Michigan's generating turnovers on nearly 25% of opponent possessions.
Okay, but that's kind of maybe a
that is possibly a quality of competition thing. Yeah. But I don't think Michigan has been up near 25% even in the early goings like this under Beilein before. And they've been rebounding well, and that was a concern obviously heading into this year.
Also.
This definitely a opponents are Lilliputian effect here, but Mo Wagner is eighth in the country in defensive rebound percentage, and that he was not doing last year even.
That's true,
regardless of anybody who was out there.
My only caution there is that it seems like many years Michigan gets to the Big Ten schedule and they've done pretty well at defensive rebounding. It looks like maybe they've turned a corner in that department, and they end up like 11th in the league.
Yeah, I think that happened last year.
I mean, it happens like every
year. Yeah, it might happen the year before that, too. Yeah, so.
Where they're like 30th or 40th in the country in defensive rebound, you're like, oh, that's pretty good. Let's see if that lasts.
And you can kind of look at it one of two ways of like, well, on the one hand, Wagner has never looked this good as a rebounder before, even against bad teams. On the other hand, do you really expect Wolf Wagner to sustain a top 10 defensive rebounding percentage all year? Probably not.
Well, he does look burlier. Like, significantly.
He is bigger, and he is definitely both making a more concerted effort on the boards and showing that he's picked up a few tricks on positioning.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely just – he seems to be in a better spot to grab more rebounds now, and that's a pretty big thing. So we'll see. I mean, he's been kind of what we would really hope for him to be so far this year, except for the fact that he's only made one of his 10 three-pointers.
And that's
not going to last.
Yeah, we know what kind of three-point shooter he is.
So, I mean, and I can understand, you know, him not being entirely in sync with the point guards like he was with Derek Walton last year and that possibly impacting that, but that's going to get better. And, I mean, Wagner's had some good looks. They're going to start falling. I would say the bigger point of concern right now is Charles Matthews. This was a game where he looked hesitant and was not creating much for himself, which in a game where he passed up a number of open three-point looks, and a couple of them ended up kind of stalling out the offense where you needed to take that shot or the defense was going to fall back and recover.
Right.
And he just doesn't look totally confident in being able to pull them right now. The only make he had in this game was actually off a really nice skip pass from Jaron Simmons where he was able to get an in-rhythm attempt from the corner. But anything above the break right now, he does not look very confident on. And that's something where, I mean, Michigan needs him to be a top three scorer on this team. He only drops 6 points against Southern Miss and isn't particularly assertive. I mean, they need more than that. And he has a couple turnovers where he tries to force the action, too. It was just kind of a bad combination of not knowing when to assert himself at the wrong time and just not looking comfortable with his shot yet. And that's obviously something that's going to have to change. But there have been other games where he's looked better in that regard. So we'll see. He's got to get some consistency going.
And then the point guard spot is still kind of – in flux.
Very much so. I mean, Xavier Simpson gets the start, does not score a point in this one, only has one assist, one turnover, a couple steals. Was very – looked good on defense, as he pretty much always does, but he was a very low-impact offensive player in this game.
Tum-tum kind of game.
A little bit. And then Jaron Simmons ends up playing most of the crunch time minutes. Doesn't get much going as a driver, goes 0 for 2 from the field. But he does hand out 5 assists. I mentioned the skip pass to Matthews. It was a really nice feed. It took some vision to get that, to even know to make that pass. And it was right on the money. But we haven't seen the scoring acumen yet. That kind of is what we expected him to bring. I suspect some of that is that Michigan is facing a lot more zone than they anticipated, and pick and roll does not always work so great against zone defenses.
Yeah.
And neither does isolation, and those are the two things that Simmons is kind of a specialist in. So right now, there's still a lot to be determined as they head to Maui, because they need to figure out who their starting point guard is, and they kind of still need to figure out the scoring pecking order just a bit, because, you know, it looked like it might be Matthews just asserting himself when he drops 21. And in this game, not so much.
Teske
looks like an option.
Point per minute.
I would say, the most consistent offensive producer so far has been Duncan Robinson. Because when you shoot 40% from threes and you generate three-pointers as much as Michigan does, that's going to work out.
That's your guy.
He's got his limitations too. But so far, I've actually been pretty encouraged by the first three games, given how the offense has looked. I mean, the defense has been, I would say, well ahead of where we've seen Michigan defenses at this point, and that's an accomplishment given how much turnover there was on this team. I mean, this is a young team. This is a team without a lot of experience. You'd expect to see more blown switches, blown rotations, straight up blow buys, and you're not seeing a lot of that.
Yeah.
And for a team that had a lot of defensive questions, for a team that had a lot of questions on the glass, you know, we haven't really seen them, other than a few troubles early against North Florida. They've handled the defensive boards quite well. Obviously, the competition jump is going to show how much those gains are actually there.
Their opener is against
LSU.
LSU. So not like
they
a huge...
they get to ease their way in a little bit. That's like a top 75 team instead of a top 25 team. So
football teams head there too.
Yeah, they sure are. There was some fan grousing given there were some moments where the offense looked pretty ugly, but that happens early in the season. You go back and look at some Beeline team scores from early in the season, even in the final 4 year, there are some ugly games in there, because this is a tough system to get down. You're not doing a whole bunch of opponent-specific scouting at this point.
Sure.
You know, you're not installing a major game plan for Southern Miss.
No.
3 games into the season. And there are some real flashes. I mean, the Teske thing is a big deal for this team.
I see what you did there.
Hey-o. And
the least convincing hey-o in the history of the term.
The defense has been, I would say, ahead of where people would reasonably expect it to be. And
sure, yeah.
And that's with opponent shooting freaking 50% on threes, while Michigan shooting 33%.
Yeah, they haven't had a lot of puck luck.
Right? No, they have not. So the 3-point luck, the thluck.
The thluck. I like thluck. Yeah,
let's go with thluck.
Thluck.
The thluck has not been strong so far this year, but this is a Beeline team. Even if the shooting isn't as good as last year because of the point guard position and Matthews, they will shoot better than 33% this year.
Right, and they're not going to continue hitting half their threes, the opponents.
No, that will stop. I mean, we saw this happen last season.
Right.
It just happened later in the year.
All right, one more break, and we're going to come back, talk about the Wisconsin Badgers, who are a football team of some renown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong.
the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Oh, God.
Welcome back to MGRO Radio 3.10. Why are you saying, oh, God?
My band in high school had a song with that exact same chord progression.
So you thought it was your band?
Yeah. For a moment there, I was very terrified.
We're going to find them all, Ace.
Nope.
All
no,
of
you're
them.
Not.
I don't
destroying
even.
Destroying all the copies.
I don't even know what a chord progression is. It's like, I guess it's just a progression of chords.
Yeah, you figured that one
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I got it. All right, Wisconsin's up. Say hi to Seth.
Hey, everybody.
Seth's been scouting the Wisconsin Badgers for mm-hmm. 3 weeks, which
yeah.
is like two cheese curds in Wisconsin years. I don't even know what that means.
It works, though. We'll give it a pass.
He told me to scout Maryland, so I was like, how can I actually make this good use of my time?
Yeah, that was a good idea. God, Maryland. Anyway, so the Wisconsin Badgers are undefeated. They have a very large ain't-played-nobody problem. Michigan has a very large ain't-beat-nobody problem.
Mm.
And one of these problems will be resolved this weekend. Vegas thinks it's Wisconsin by 7.5 at latest. S&P thinks Wisconsin by 10. I think it'll be more competitive than that. But I haven't gone in as much detail into the ins and outs of the Badgers as Seth. So let's start with their defense, which is a quintessential 3-4.
Yep.
My favorite thing about S&P this year is they have like havoc rates for all three levels of the defense. And Wisconsin is 119th in a defensive line havoc rate, which is like stuff, sacks, pass breakups. They are first in linebacker havoc rate. They are first in defensive back havoc rate. So a prototypical and quintessential 3-4 defense.
Yeah, they their defensive linemen know what their jobs are, and that is to be 350 pounds and not move. So,
did you see the awesome joke I made in the preview?
I did.
Yeah, wasn't that awesome?
The Savage Garden joke.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Way
so
to
they
go.
Have a 350 pound nose tackle called Olive
Sagapolu.
Sagapolu. And, yeah, if they're not calling him Savage Garden, I don't know what's going on.
Ryan with the joke.
Look, I get enough of that from Ace, okay? That's his job. Your job is to be usefully informative about a football team, and you leave that to him.
All right, I'll be usefully informative. The other guy is actually even better than he is.
Connor Sheehy.
Connor Sheehy is really good.
Sheehy is good. I noticed him.
He legit played nose tackle 2 years ago at 280 pounds and was good.
Yeah, I noticed him in UFR last year, and I was like, yeah, that guy can play. I didn't actually think that much of Savage Garden last year. I thought he was just kind of like there. But you gave him a star.
I did, and it was a couple of plays that made that happen. He actually gets moved a couple of times. This could just be Iowa. It was big guards that go forward, but he does get moved a little bit when he gets
You watched them play Maryland and Iowa?
Oof. Yeah.
I mean, Iowa.
You find somebody on the Wisconsin.
I was about to say, you couldn't get that FAU game?
Oops. The first game of the season, I kind of figured they're going to be a little different. But he actually does. He pushes the pile, and like when he gets down, he's impossible to move. I mean, he's 350 pounds, so he's impossible to move. And then he actually had some pass rush events, one where it was just the quarterback is sitting back there way too long, and he's just like, I've just got a center in my way. I'm just going to bowl right through. And he does so and almost gets a safety.
Yeah, he's got two sacks this year.
Okay.
Kind of terrifying for a guy that big, but
usually Brandon Peters has been sacked by that guy before, thanks to Cesar Ruiz. So
yeah,
he's been through the ringer, been Wile E. Coyote after some sort of terrible industrial accident. And then they have their infinite like linebacker supply core that they lose two guys and it just doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know if they've got any more because they weren't subbing these guys out. So maybe we've reached the bottom.
Like if they get a targeting call,
they only have 8 great linebackers at one time. It's not endless. But yeah, I was hoping that the walk on would not be who's the third string walk on would not be that good. And as soon as I saw the tape, I'm like, nope, that guy's flagging down Akram Wadley in space near the end zone.
And Connolly, thanks to their myriad injuries, has played a fair amount before, too. So yeah, he's not super inexperienced.
He, like, featured on, like, a Pro Football Focus tweet even before this season.
Yeah.
Where they were talking about, like, the best coverage linebackers. TJ Edwards was number one, and Connolly was on that same list. I think that was just Big Ten.
Yeah.
Because that would be insane.
But, man, TJ Edwards has borne that out.
Yeah, I had to throw my NCAA 2010 DVD disc out once again because of that.
See, like, I liked that joke, and I'm going to praise that joke because I was like, yes, that was the one where the linebackers just leapt up for 10 feet in the air constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't normally happen in real life except for with TJ Edwards, who did exactly that.
So, and then they have the person I despise the most in the Big Ten this year. Hoodie-wearing cornerback Nick Nelson.
We saw him last year. He's a Hawaii transfer.
Oh, a Hawaii transfer?
Yeah. Which may explain the hoodie.
Yeah.
Dude went under a serious climate change.
I don't have a problem with turtleneck or whatever you're doing, but you got a hoodie on.
The hood, yeah.
Just like, that's aerodynamically incorrect, sir.
At least he's playing defense. On offense, I really, because there's like wide receivers who do it now, and it's like, dude, like.
Someone can attack you by the hoodie.
Yeah.
You're going to feel stupid.
Yeah, they can't feel good. And like, as your ACL is exploding into a million pieces, you're going to be like, I made a poor choice in clothing.
Well, how about like you just don't get a touchdown?
I mean, hopefully that's not that bad.
That's.
But that is like just asking to get horse collared legally.
At least my ears are warm.
This is a podcast that is weak on genocide and strong on ACL tears.
Anyway,
so this guy stood out to me because I watched most of the Wisconsin-Indiana game, and he got wrecked by Simi Cobbs and mostly responded by tackling him before the ball got there. He got 3 interference calls. One was a touchdown anyway, and then critical third down late, he gets beat by Cobbs on a comeback route, and guy just rips him back again, and no flag. Tom Allen goes nuts on the sideline in that way Tom Allen does. And I'm just like, he did it. He Michigan stated it.
He hit his flag quota.
He had three pass interference calls. Like, oh, we can't call it on this guy again. We're out of flags. I don't know why I didn't pick him up again, but we're out of flags. So, yeah, he wears a hoodie. I think he's bad. Pro Football Focus loves him.
I think this is probably related to him being incredibly grabby and playing
the
receiver.
18 PBUs.
18 PBUs and no picks. I don't know if I've seen a number that high without any interceptions. Yeah, like Rashard Fant may have come close a few years ago.
Yeah, Todd Howard.
Oh, yeah.
Todd Howard would have to turn his head around if he was ever going to pick.
Well, I mean, I think that kind of proves the point we're going at here with Nick Nelson.
I've met him a couple times.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can say that, but I might run into him again, and he'll be like, hey, you said that thing. And I'll be like, yeah, so I'm standing up to you in a press conference like a real journalist now. So I don't like him, and I think that he's going to get terribly exposed probably in the bowl game or against Ohio State.
Let's say he knows how to play Big Ten football.
But we don't have the passing offense to really take advantage of it. I do think that he might get victimized on one of those it's first down, run play action, and the safety's freaking out about the run.
And Donovan Peoples-Jones is running behind everybody to not get the ball.
Last year against Wisconsin, Darbo got the long shot after forever waiting for those to happen.
We had been waiting.
That was against Wisconsin.
And you hit one of those, and you're like, all right, now we can maybe score a touchdown. Or two, even. It's a really good front seven. I have questions about, because I think Tindall's just a guy, their other cornerback.
Yeah, he was the player victimized on the Darbo touchdown last year.
So, questions about how good that secondary actually is that have been obscured by the murderer's row of quarterbacks they've gone up against.
Seriously.
I mean, Purdue, they did play Purdue. But other than that, it's like,
it is Northwestern, Nebraska, Maryland, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa. That has been the rest of their conference schedule.
So
their win expectancy has not dropped below 99% this year.
No, they've been ruthless and efficient, and I have a lot of respect for this defense. I do think that there might be a couple of weak points. I also think that Michigan is extraordinarily ill-positioned to take advantage of them.
Yes. I mean, you're going against a team with a strong front, and your whole thing is that you've got to establish the run at all costs.
Yeah, and
that's tough.
They're like a 3-4 team
flinging guys from all angles against a young offensive line.
They have four different outside linebackers who have at least 3.5 sacks. They have 14 different guys with sacks.
Yeah.
Like, for a team that can't pick up a blitz to save its life, this is a terrible, terrible defense to go up against.
There is a sliver of hope I found in the Nebraska game where the other side of that line, not Sheehy's side, but they kind of rotate strong side defensive ends, and both those guys are a little bit undersized. They get pushed around a little bit, and the linebacker on that side, Garrett Dooley, is the guy I'm really interested in watching in this game because he hasn't gone up against Michigan-level tight ends really yet.
Well, Wisconsin really hasn't played anybody who brings the kind of offense that Michigan brings, except Iowa last week, but Iowa doesn't run power. They're just a total zone team. So they haven't really had those kind of tests, right?
And Iowa was mailing it in this last week, too.
I don't know what they were doing.
They were so terrible.
They were way
worse than Iowa's played all year in the game.
I don't know what's the deal there, but Michigan isn't going to run outside zone. They are going to run power. And they haven't had to deal with power from a big set, except every day in practice, of course. So it's not like they're going to be surprised. But, if Michigan is able to do that, their nose tackle is probably not going to be very effective because he's not the kind of guy like Hurst who's going to do something when he's on the backside of a play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their outside guys are kind of like pass rushery. I don't know how good they are. And then if you can confuse those inside linebackers with maybe the tricks you've been saving up for the past month, then you can see Michigan, get some yards. I think they're going to be able to move the ball, in part because I think you're going to see a lot of stuff they haven't put on film already.
Yeah, it's sustained drives are not going to happen, but I would actually, the last piece we should talk about is the safety.
Well, I mean, the one thing is their stats are they're a decent run defense. They're 25th, so they're not out of this world. And their strength is they don't give up big plays.
Yeah, right. The success rate's right in that range too, at 23rd.
So their line yards against is 43rd. Their power success rate is.
But as to that, low. One of their best, they're by far best run defender in the secondary is Dakota Dixon, and he's possible to play?
He's questionable.
He's questionable.
Because Wisconsin
releases – put out injury reports.
They put out an injury report. And I'm like,
no one's ever going to put out an injury report against Harbaugh again. He just – he broke that norm.
They
and it's
did. there's an injury report for Wisconsin this week. And it's like it's just like some guys are out and some guys are questionable. But, like, you know, I'm like, all right.
Yeah. Although their injury report this week included guys who they revealed this week have actually, like, left the program. So who knows how because George Rushing just hasn't been on the team this year, and Jazz PD apparently has taken time off to focus on other things. And he was on the injury report week, so.
Yeah.
So without Dakota Dixon, they play a walk-on.
They play a walk-on, but or they put a nickelback in there instead of him, too. They were trying, and that shows you how little it was working, because they like to blitz out of that guy. They like to bring him down as a fourth linebacker, right. And neither one of those guys can get back and cover a cover two zone.
Fifth linebacker.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They have a lot of linebackers.
They do. That's
all right. So yeah, without him, it does change the complexion a little bit. I don't know if they'll leave the other guy back. When they did bring a guy up, there was actually some room to run.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michigan's hope here is get a couple good runs, break something big, and then beat the walk-on safety.
And that's a loss, too, for them, just because Dixon's a pretty darn good player.
Yeah, that's the thing. If they're going from a legitimately good, very fun to watch player, by the way, because he's kind of a little guy who is pretty athletic. And
dreads flying around.
Yeah.
Like that guy.
Yeah. Like a safety version of Devin Bush.
Other side of the ball, do we even need to talk about it? It's Wisconsin. I mean,
there are some things to discuss here.
Okay.
Yes.
But, like, you know exactly what's coming at Michigan. You know that they have a freshman running back who was committed to Rutgers who has rushed for 1,500 yards this year.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall, we were upset, actually, when Wisconsin got him. Like, we saw him flip from Rutgers, and we're like, oh, they found another New Jersey running back.
Yeah, I mean, it was part of the, like, running back carousel when Ohio State started having some uncertainty with their stuff.
And
there was
Walker,
a bit of a ripple effect, and that is how Taylor ended up at Wisconsin.
Well, they're in different years, though. Like, Wisconsin got a guy flipped from...
I think it happened a couple years in a row. There was some weird ripple effect thing that ended up with Taylor getting there.
So, I mean, this is a guy who looks like a difference maker statistically because he's averaging 7 yards a carry, and Wisconsin's other backs are at like 4.6. And I think that's
right. And when you just watch Jonathan Taylor play, that guy is really darn good.
Well, yeah.
That's
why I did that whole link fest in there.
Okay, but I think when you watch Taylor play, he doesn't look like a guy who – I mean, I don't know. Like, he looks good, but I don't think he's going to be the guy who's dodging six guys in the backfield and making it work like Barkley.
Maybe not, but to me, that did. First of all, he's probably not going to have to do that.
I don't. I mean,
maybe a little bit.
If Michigan's defense was elite, this would be a Ron Dane situation where, like,
it could be
he's big
Dane
and
situation.
He just can't get his. He can't get anything because there isn't anything to be there. But he's really good at setting up blocks. He's really good at being patient and finding that hole. And this is not something that Michigan. I think I would put him better ahead of Barkley right now. He's
all right
as a complete back as you can be, except for he's not Brian Calhoun.
We're going to see about how this goes down.
I have tilted my head very far to the side.
I'm pretty skeptical that this guy is.
I mean, I think Jonathan Taylor is an NFL level running back. I just think Saquon Barkley is freaking.
I think we're going to find out because, like, this guy could be Ron Dane. He could be Melvin Gordon. Look at the rush defenses they've gone up against, and, like, while this guy's a difference maker for Wisconsin's rush offense against FAU. Purdue.
Yeah, I just want to clarify. I mean, as a the rush offense, Taylor is part of this rush offense, Barkley in context of his rush offense. I'm not putting Barkley behind the offensive line of Wisconsin right now.
And then the other kind of question mark that they have is their center went out in the last game, replaced by, you called him, Ben Braden at center.
Yes. They're all Ben Braden, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know, they make it work. So, like, if that guy's going up against Mo Hurst, then that could be Michigan in the backfield a lot. And once that guy starts dodging tackles, then that really takes his way to
find he's played a whole bunch because they rotated him in before, but always a guard. And at center, he did have a couple missed exchanges that ended up yakety sacks or yakety snapping.
Yakety snap, yes.
Yakety snap. It's hard to keep all the MGO glossary terms.
That one's easy.
Yeah, so that's something to watch. Again, questionable, so I don't know if the center will be back. The center is really good. He's only a redshirt freshman, and he's kind of another one of those guys who's built like a box and just.
But they're either working with a backup or a injured redshirt freshman against Maurice Hurst.
Yes.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I think if the second defensive tackle, because you know they're going to have a four-man front pretty much the whole game.
Yeah.
If that guy can hold up, I think that this is going to be a pretty successful outing.
Because Wisconsin does have one very good guard.
Yes.
Bo Benchwal, or however the heck you say his name.
I was waiting for you to tell me how to pronounce this.
I think I got it, to be honest, the first time, but it's just, it sounds like you're just kind of slurring it.
I watched three different broadcasts, and I think it was pronounced differently on all three of them.
Benchwal or
Benchwal? Benchwal. Yeah. I looked it up. It's the.
I should have the game notes up because then I can cheat and look at the pronunciation.
This is the
Wisconsin is the only place in the entire world where that name appears. By the way,
I was about to say this is the most Wisconsin named offensive line.
Someone posted in the Slack chat the names that were most common in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they do have an offensive tackle named Cole Van Lannen, and that was 90% of Van Lannens live in Wisconsin.
Well, so four of the five starters here are Benchwal, Erdman, Dietzen, and Dieter.
Yep.
And then they have a guy named Edwards who should get off the team right now.
Well, he's a sore spot for a reason. It's clearly name-related.
Name-related. And then at wide receiver, they've lost Jazz Peavy. They've lost Quentin Cephas.
Quintez.
All right.
They also lost George Rushing before the season. You might remember him as the guy targeted on Jordan Lewis's pick.
So I didn't remember that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So they've...
I have the picture in my head right now, George Rushing.
Humiliate him right out of football. So their receivers are now, they have a sophomore and they have a couple of freshmen.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that matchup is going to go well for them against Michigan's corners, even if LeVert Hill is out of this game. Because you still have Watson.
Apparently LeVert Hill right now is only Michigan's second best corner against it by passer rating. Yeah,
passer rating when you're going up against Big Ten quarterbacks is like.
Yeah, my response to that was thank you, Demery and Co.
Yeah, we've confirmed that David Long and LeVert Hill are both quite good.
Well, Long did work against Simi Cobbs. He was really good in this most recent game. If they're in a big formation and Long's head up with a receiver, I think you can just single him up all day, and that's not going to hurt Michigan. The thing that does worry is, Troy Fumagalli.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is he going to get loose? I mean, is Michigan going to
He doesn't need to get loose to be open.
Well, you know.
What he does is he boxes guys out very well. He's the expert at slowing up his route and having the linebacker bump into him, and then there's nothing you can do.
Right, and then he's boxing out.
Yeah.
I think the way to slow down Fumagalli is just to get to Hornibrook, right?
Well, yeah, so that's the thing that is remarkable about this pass offense is that they're 95th in sack rate, and they have a pass offense that's like Michigan's pass offense where a lot of the time when they go back and they're passing and on non-passing down, it's a shock.
Yeah.
Because they're running it almost 80% of the time on a standard down. So if you're running play action and people are expecting a run and you're still giving up a butt ton of sacks, what does that say about your pass protection? It says it's a little bit better than Michigan's.
Someone in the comments pointed out the Pro Football Focus thought the right tackle that he was apparently the second best or second highest score they had in mid-October.
Well, given their schedule, that probably could have turned.
That's true.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Because if they grade like I grade, they don't take opponent into consideration.
Right.
Well, based on how their grades spit out, I would say that's very much for them, too.
I was also very surprised because we saw Maryland's pass rush make Michigan's offensive line actually look okay at pass protection. And those guys were – I think I had 20 pass events instead of 7 of them. He lost his guy.
Wow. So, and then Hornibrook has 12 interceptions on the year for an interception rate that is worse than John O'Korn. And a lot of those are noodle arm dude trying to fit it in an area. He's had an interception in every Big Ten game so far this year.
Yep.
I mean,
several multiple pick games.
He also fits it in those areas, though. He's got his red zone percentage is really high.
But it seems like some of those are just the seeing eyeball where you don't expect that this guy's got a freaking knuckler.
That's
just don't know how to play it.
There were a couple plays where, you know, I said puppy dog trying, you know, who doesn't know the physics of frisbees yet, and kind of jumps at it, and the frisbee's still in the air, and the dog goes down, like, oh, I can't. Like, those happen with Hornibrook balls. Like, the ball is just okay. In the air so long that the cornerback has his timing all messed up.
So, I mean, this is a guy who I think Michigan does need some turnovers to win this game.
Yeah, they're going to have to turn him over.
And they've got a guy who's been very generous with opposing defenses this year. So, like, I think that's a shot. Their special teams are nothing special. They have a punter who doesn't punt it far and doesn't get many returns. They haven't done anything on returns themselves.
They do have a Brazilian kicker who may dance after hitting a field goal. So
yes, but
got to keep note of that.
Fat Brazilian kicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay, Rafael Gaglianone is an entertaining
He's worth noting. Definitely worth noting.
Pevens.
You'll get another chance to hate on Nick Nelson because he returns punts, so maybe they'll drag him down by the hoodie.
just a hack. Very, very few opposing players.
He has put the ball on the ground twice this year.
That's true. They have two muffs. They have two fumbles on kickoffs, too. So
And they haven't lost any of them yet, so the fluck indicates that Michigan should be
turning
around.
That's a Taylor thing, too, by the way. He fumbles.
Does he?
Yeah.
How much fumble?
Apparently won a game.
Won a game?
I'll take
one,
that.
One, yeah, or on average, yeah, won a game.
That's a lot.
They're giving him four fumbles on the year, losing three of them.
Okay.
On 219 carries.
Then I saw all of them.
He's not Mike Hart.
Okay. Well, get a couple turnovers, and that projected spread is all gone. So hopefully that will happen, and Michigan will leave Madison with a victory or a tie. Either one's okay by me.
Let's have luck in Madison.
We'd like to thank our sponsors one more time: Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.